Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Burlap and Barrel, a public benefit corporation working directly with smallholder spice farmers around the world to source unique, beautiful spices for professional chefs and home cooks.
This week on Meat and Three, we're spotlighting the people who prepare our meat before it reaches our plates. We hear from whole animal butchers, the brains behind a meat vending machine, California cattle ranchers, and a master of charcuterie who isn't using meat at all.
Like a smoked and grilled center stalk of the broccoli, and then it gets finished with some mustard, barbecue sauce, and sauerkraut.
Ranching and farming being as difficult as it is, you know, it's just one thing after another, and at some point you just give up.
I had a wild idea that if I learned butchery, maybe I could start to be kind of a link in the supply chain.
Listen to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Item 13, an African food podcast, and I'm your host, Yom Akuaku. Every week, we'll delve into the delicious world of African food, including chefs, curators, and bloggers. Here's the show.
So welcome to the show, Lola.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And how do I pronounce your name? Yom, right?
Yom, yes.
Yom.
Very simple, very easy.
Very think, simple name.
Yeah, I think maybe because it's not common, people hesitate. But I'm like, yes. No, it's what you see. It rhymes with form and dorm, all the orm.
Yeah, exactly.
You can think of. So this is great. Now, I'm excited to have you on. One, because of what you make, because I have all sorts of thoughts about soup in general.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, just because Toronto has a special place in my heart, because I lived in Toronto for a year.
That's awesome.
For immigration reasons, as these things go.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. So, yeah. So great. So for those that are tuning in, let's start with a little bit about you. Tell us who Lola is, where you're from, where you grew up, sort of your major influences, where you've lived, traveled, if you want to share that, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for having me, Yom. I think what you're doing is great. You know, Africa, you know, I guess I'll go deeper into my passion and reason for launching It Super. Mm-hmm. But it's closely related to what you are doing in this space, trying to create more visibility and more understanding of food as a culture for, you know, Black and African food. So I think this is amazing.
And
thanks for having me. So my name is Lola Adeyemi. I am Nigerian by birth. I moved to Canada as an international student about 15 years ago, over 15 years ago now. And I went to Winnipeg, University of Winnipeg, freezing cold, came from Lagos, to Winnipeg. It was not fun. It definitely wasn't the image I had from watching all the TV shows and the movies about what living abroad would be. It was freezing cold. I didn't like it much, but I was excited. I was excited for the new adventure, for the new opportunities. And to just leave home, you know. Sometimes people ask me, "Oh my God!" You know, my Caucasian coworkers will say, "Wow, you left your country to come here. That is such a big thing." And I'm thinking, I was excited to leave.
Yeah.
Not like I don't love home, but you know, the image that we get as Africans of the greener pastures of what it is to be in the diaspora is like, you know, that dream. So it was an exciting time. Yes, scary, but more of excitement than fear, but obviously a huge adjustment moving here and being on your own and trying to hustle basically your way through. But I've been blessed. After graduating, I've worked in the financial industry, started in investments, and then moved into IT. And I worked in IT for a lot of the big banks. And before I officially quit my 9-to-5 to focus on my businesses, my last job was with the City of Toronto, working as an IT consultant. So I had a great 9-to-5 career serving in the private and public sector. And so that's kind of like my career up until when I, you know, moved into being an entrepreneur. But yeah, it's been an exciting time being here in Canada. And one of the reasons why I stated on my label that food and music is they're one of the key aspects of African culture that brings us together, right? So as we were saying before we started officially interviewing that Ghanaians, you're from Ghana and I'm from Nigeria, and we might bicker like siblings, but food and music, we collaborate so nicely with that, just like sports and the likes. But I would say predominantly food and music. And so I felt that there was a huge gap in the food industry, especially for consumer packaged goods, which are basically foods you can buy that are ready made or ready to eat in your local grocery stores. For African foods or African-inspired foods. I felt like the African market was predominantly brick-and-mortar restaurants, but fully packaged goods that were easy for anyone to appreciate and purchase and buy and consume was pretty non-existent. So I thought that there was a huge gap there. And what really ignited this for me was because, you know, in my life, working in 9-to-5, you know, going to work downtown, and sometimes you have company lunches or potlucks, and people say, okay, let's try a different, you know, food. Let's go to the Indian restaurant. Let's go to the Chinese restaurant. And then they will say, oh, can we go to an African or a Nigerian restaurant? And I'll be like, the ones that they are, they're like not downtown. They're in like, because a lot of the African restaurants are in the low income neighborhoods. Exactly. Where there is a lot more population of African immigrants condensed in those areas. So that's where the African restaurants are. I couldn't take my coworkers there because they're not like where they're not. And also the setup and everything wasn't, the ambience wasn't the way, the image that I wanted them to have of Africa. Right. So I would say, and I couldn't also say, okay, go to the grocery store and just buy this sauce and put it together and you at least have a taste of what Africa is. So most times it would just be when there was a potluck and I made some nice plantains or I made jollof rice, I made something or I made a sauce, and my Tupperware was always empty. People were always fighting for my food and they would always ask me, you know, excited about what I would make at the next potluck. And that really ignited it for me because I just felt like there's a huge gap in like, I really want Africa as a continent is practically missing in the grocery aisles, right? So you see the ethnic food aisles, you see Oriental, and now gradually we're beginning to see the Caribbean, but Africa as a continent is pretty much not existent in the retail space. So I thought, you know, it's definitely something that I wanted to start with. And the reason why I started with soups, as you know, Nom, is soup for us is not for when it's cold. There's nothing like soup. Right. Soup is an everyday thing. We're from very hot countries, but we eat soup every day. So coming here and people are like, oh, you know, soup is just like it's not a tea for us. It's a hearty meal. Right. And a lot of times our soups are like gumbo, like it's like you put in vegetables, meat, fish, like just put in so much stuff. So it's very hearty and rich, and it's not broth and vegetables like you have here. Right. So I wanted to change the image of what people think soup is or soup should be, and as well introduce people to more flavors, more spices, you know, not the bland soups and, you know, the same soups again and again, because even my competitors, they're all doing the same soups in different packaging, really. So that is my, I would say, competitive advantage, that yeah. my soups are unique one, but also taste amazing. So I think, and there's just that quality to it that differentiates me from the others. So yeah. so that's basically how It's Super was born.
It's you've shared so much good stuff like that I want to unpack that we don't have enough time for, but one just yeah. I think we both had the same, and it's amazing to me the more people I talk to who have sort of landed in this food space with similar background in terms of having come from business or finance or mm-hmm. IT. I had a similar background, so I started the opposite. I started in IT and then accounting at Deloitte, and then ended up in finance. And then similar to you, just doing business dinners and, you know, trying to figure out where are we going to eat, and then mm-hmm. inevitably it comes to like, oh, we should try African food, quote unquote, mm-hmm. and then it's like same experience. One,
yeah.
it's either they're either not enough, or two, they're mm-hmm. in like a neighborhood that you don't yeah. feel comfortable taking
them, yeah,
mm-hmm. them to, or just you, or even for those that are close enough that, oh, maybe you can warrant a weekend trip to for your closer coworkers. It's just like you don't know that the level of service or the exactly. ambience will even be appropriate, exactly. right? And so I think it's interesting that you chose to sort of move into the CPG space, which I hadn't thought about, but that's like actually mm-hmm. really smart, really clever.
Yeah.
Because when you yeah. think about what people, even now with actually, and I don't know, we can talk about that later, but with mm-hmm. more people at home and cooking and trying,
yes.
actually yes. this morning, I was listening to a report on NBC where they were talking about how people, I forget the number, but it was ridiculous. Like people are cooking so yes. much more times at home yes. now, and that they've cooked the same meal at mm-hmm. least like, some super ridiculous number. So people are yes. looking for variety, and they're looking for simple things to cook. And so this is the right time to also
exactly.
Introduce new. So whoever is listening that hasn't tried this yet, this is something you can also add to your rotation.
Yes.
as you're thinking of what's at home and good for you. So that's great. So, I mean, you've actually mm-hmm. answered a lot of potential questions I was going to ask in terms of why soup. Mm-hmm. I love the name, like It's Super, with a play yeah. on the word soup, and then that is.
I know. Thank you. A lot of times, like the first time I met one of my mentors, kind of telling him about the idea, because sincerely, when the idea came, it was like, oh my God, it came in the shower. Like a lot of ideas come.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have a soup line. I'm going to call it It's Super. It was like this kind of rainfall, yeah. literally, of ideas just coming ding, ding, ding. And I had the concept for the logo, everything. But I didn't even know what I was going to do. I already had my logo before I even started the business. Wow. Like, because the idea came and yeah. I was like, okay, I'm going to actually action it. But with between trying to do the research, oh my God, because I couldn't find anybody else who looked like me, had the same experiences as I did, that was in this business to reach out to, that I could learn from, I got really overwhelmed, because I couldn't figure out, okay, how do I start? This is food. Mm-hmm. There's so many steps. Oh my God. It's crazy. Especially, I don't know how it is in the States, but in Canada, health food safety is ridiculous. So, which is a good thing, but it creates a lot of like barriers for people who are just starting new, right? You can't just jump and just start. Like there's so many steps. And so I got really overwhelmed, and I almost really quit, because I thought, you know, this is just too much. I don't know what I'm doing, right? And really, I started feeling intimidated by the other products that were out there that were like vegan this, gluten this, and you know, all those fancy yeah. words. And I just thought, you know, will people really like this product, you know? And you know, that's the thing about being kind of like, I won't say like I'm a total pioneer, but I'm still one of the first, you know, and the only soup brand that is African or Black owned, but as well one of the first, you know, food brands in the mainstream market that is African owned and inspired. So to me, I couldn't really benchmark against, right. you know, who else could I, you know, so it was difficult. But one of the mentors I met, who's a, a, British man and has like 20 years experience in the industry. He said, "Oh my God, I love this idea. I've been waiting for someone to bring up an idea like this. This is fantastic." But then he said, "I love your brand. I love the name and I love the story. Go and trademark this." And then I went to trademark it even before had my business, everything. But yeah, it just takes one person believing in you. And from that point, that's when I said, "Okay, I'm going ahead." But prior to that, if I didn't meet him, this business might not exist today, because, you know, and that's the importance of, you know, mentors, or just having somebody to believe in you, or somebody you can relate to that has done something before. And so it can inspire you that it's possible.
Question for just, how did you meet this mentor? Like, was it through a program or someone in your network already? Just for anyone who's listening that's thinking of starting something.
Yes, so it was through a program that doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately. Okay. I did some research because I thought, all I know is IT. I don't know much about the food business, and I wanted to do it right. I didn't want to create a product and be stuck in the Afro-Caribbean store. Right. So I wanted to do it at the quality level that, you know, other, you know, Canadian brands were. So I did some research and I found this NGO called Food Starter that is basically a food startup incubator for people who want to launch food brands and get into the mainstream market. And it wasn't free. I had to pay for it. It was like maybe $1,500. Wow. I remember a friend of mine saying, "Oh my God, that's a lot of money that you can use to put in your packaging." And I thought, you know what? I'd rather spend $1,500 to just get some training on probably information I can find myself online. But aside from that, the network and the people that I could potentially meet as things I cannot put a price on. And it was through that program I met this mentor. But I must say that during the program was where I met some of the people in my cohort, were people who, you know, I was the only Black person, I was the only Black female, but there were also people who had all these like fancy brands, fancy ideas, I should say. Like I said, like the vegans and gluten this and all that. And I was just so intimidated. And I really felt like, oh my God, nobody would understand my product. Nobody will understand what I'm doing. And so by the end of the program, I was almost giving up. But that mentor there was a mentorship class, or I would say mentorship session, that came with the program for a 1-hour meeting with, you know, industry leaders. And that's when I met this mentor. So that $1,500 was worth it in the end, because I did learn a lot from the training, but the knowledge became overwhelming and as well intimidating for me. So I think the key factor is that $1,500 paid for the mentor that made this actually come to pass.
That's great. And I think that's of note for people who are either thinking of going into food businesses, or even as people are doing like GoFundMes or trying to raise money to get into this space. Like, I hope, you know, your story also helps people to think about that, the initial investment that has to go into creating something like this. Because I've talked about this in the restaurant space mostly, but it may apply here, where a lot of our own people actually don't want to pay. Like, they would pay the same price.
People don't want to pay,
as you know, a similar thing that's Italian or whatever, but because it's from their own tradition or origin place, they're like, "Oh, I can make this at home myself for half of the price," or whatever, in terms of restaurant food. But there's a lot that goes into it, and to bring it up to the quality of, like you said, mainstream audiences, and not just for the community. So that's fantastic. Just quickly before we go to the break, I want you to share like the product line, like what are the different soups that you have, the branding, and you guys, when you I'll share the link to the website. The branding looks amazing. I don't know if you did that before the incubator or not, but it looks fantastic. It's one of those things that will catch your eye on the eye of the grocery aisle for sure.
Thank you so much for that. I would say that exactly my, when I was thinking of the, I'd done the logo and I had the vision of what the colors of the brand would be before I even, we did the packaging and all that. But the branding itself was to be vibrant, colorful, like basically what Africa stands for me, you know, the, like the Ankaras and the vibrancy of that and our music, our culture, the heat, the spice, you know, those colors are what I really wanted to reflect. Something exotic, something tropical, vibrant, spicy, you know. I think I used those exact words to my designer when it was, yeah. when I was, and I sent him some of our tribal markings, you know, our statue, our carvings and, you know, all those things that have like the face. Some of our designs actually have those tribal marks on the face. Some of those marks that, you know, in our past ancestors used to have, and you also see on those carvings. So I sent him some of those to put in the design as well. So that's basically the concept that we had for the designs. And also because of that, that's why a lot of Ankara prints or our culture stands out, because we're different, right? So I wanted my packaging to stand out from the others. So we have currently, I would say we have five recipes. Okay. That we sell. We're actually, so originally we have four, but then we're introducing two new ones and removing one. And I'll kind of explain, and removing that one mainstream. So basically we have a meat lover's chili, which is basically like our beans that we eat in Africa.
Okay.
But then I made it a chili because we don't mix beans. We only use one beans in traditionally, but in the chili, the difference with the chili is that they have like the kidney beans and then the regular beans. So I kind of, and then put the spices and all that in there. So then we have a carrot and paprika, and then we have, which is a vegan. Then we have the fish pepper soup, and then we have a chicken peanut. The chicken peanut is inspired by you, my sister, Ghanaians. Although in some parts of Nigeria, we also eat granite soup, which is basically the peanut soup. But yeah, it's very popular in Ghana. So we have the, and it's actually our one of our best sellers, the chicken peanut.
Because you won an award for that chicken peanut soup, right?
Yes. So we're nominated for a best new product of the year, which was fantastic, only months after launching. So that was really great.
So you need to doff your cap to your Ghanaian brothers.
I know. And my Ghanaian sister-in-law, she was really excited for that, and she wanted to take all the props.
Yeah, I know. That's amazing. That's an amazing story. And what's new, you said?
So the new recipe, we have a Moroccan chickpea and chicken. Ooh, so it's a Moroccan really good. It's really, really good. And then we have our West African pepper sauce. You know that sauce that we put
on everything.
Our own. Yes, that is our put on everything sauce. So I thought, you know what, West African specifically, Ghanaians and all that, you know how we have that, our sauce we use for the fried yam, for the fish, for the plantain. That sauce that goes on rice, goes on everything. I'm like, okay, yes, I need to do that. So we have the sauce. So the two new products are the Moroccan chickpea and the pepper sauce. Now the fish pepper soup, we're stopping that from going like mainstream because you know how when you start a new brand and you have a couple of products and then some of them don't do as well as others. Yeah. So our main client base are Caucasian. So they are the main buyers of our product because, you know, like you said earlier, sometimes Africans feel like, oh, I can do peanut soup myself, like I don't have to. But we do get a lot of Blacks and Africans who purchase, but our main client base is Caucasian. And so because of that, Caucasians are very used to fish on the dry, like on a grill or in something, but not in a soup. So our main clients that buy the fish pepper soup are Asians and Blacks.
Oh, that makes
sense. But they are not our main demographic. So we had to think about it and we strategized, even though it was close to my heart to have a pepper soup.
I know. I was going to say, for me, if it was available in the US, like that would
exactly,
be
one, exactly.
One for sure, I would
so
be.
It does well within, but you know, you have to think as a business,
right?
Are you going to scale up with the least performing recipe? So those are kind of choices you have to make and remove emotions from actual strategy and say, okay, strategically, which of these shouldn't we scale up on? And that was the weakest link. So that that recipe, for now, we still have some inventory, so it will be sold online for some time, but we'll definitely not. I'm still in the future, we'll think about probably still introducing a pepper soup, but maybe chicken or meat or something else instead of fish, because like I said, fish is kind of like a thing where people are like, oh, fish and water. Ooh,
yeah.
So people can meanwhile, it tastes really good. The thing is, it takes a lot of work. Yeah. It's the work it takes for me to convince the buyers to taste it before they buy. But once they taste it, they're convinced and they like it. But if you have to convince people for every sale, then it's too much work. So yeah.
That's a lot. Okay. Cool. No, this is exciting stuff. This is all good stuff. Yeah. I think this is a good time to take a break. And then when we come back, I want to continue on this topic of building that food business in the context of you being an immigrant in Canada and what that means for you in terms of funding, educating people on the food, which you've touched on a little bit, and then maybe go back a little bit to you not having the food experience and some of the details around, you know, figuring out the right recipe for mass production, for example. I know in the US we have labeling requirements for calorie counts and whatnot, so we can talk about that
there's so much
after the break.
Okay,
so we'll take a break here. When we come back, there's a lot more to talk about with Lola.
I'm Ethan Frisch, co-host of Why Food and co-founder of Burlap and Barrel, a public benefit corporation working directly with smallholder spice farmers around the world to source unique, beautiful spices for professional chefs and home cooks. We set our partner farmers up to export their own crops for the first time, and they get access to a whole new market here in the US, and we get access to spices that other companies can't source. We're honored to work with restaurants including 11 Madison Park, Blue Hill, and Chez Panisse, as well as thousands of home cooks across the country. Visit us at burlapandbarrel.com.
So we're back, ready to talk more about building a food business. And I think this is actually, I want to talk about it from the context of you being immigrant and Black in Canada. And I think just even in this moment of everything that's going on, particularly in the US, but I think it's become a global movement.
It has,
Understanding what that means for you as you try to build your business. And if you can also share, I'll ask you specific questions, but if you can also share too, like the impact of COVID on your business as well, if it's had an impact, that would be great. So where should we start? Let's see. So you touched on a little bit earlier on about not having the food experience. So the food incubator experience was great in that it gave you a sense of, like, helped you through your learning curve, right? So you were able to figure out some of that stuff. But in terms of, so like, that's probably helpful. But then as you move out of it, because how long was the incubator?
It was a 3 month program.
So
so, but it was 3 months, but you know, a lot of people had their full-time jobs. So it was twice a week and the evenings kind of thing. So I believe maybe like 15 classes in total.
Oh, that's a lot. So then maybe
10 classes, I think.
Question is, how long did it take you from concept to first production, you know, first production of the soup? And then in between there, is it, you know, you have the incubator, but what did you learn from the incubator versus like learning on your own?
Okay, so great question. So the idea came to me in October, November 2017. Then I applied for the incubator in December, just a few days before it closed. I found out in December and I applied. Then I got into the program, and then it started in January. The program ended in late March. And then from then on, after meeting the mentor who said, yeah, go ahead, then I had like a kind of a plan of some of the things that I learned in the incubator about like branding, like strategy, the steps that you mm-hmm. need to take, like things like having a food handler's license, you know, cook the kind of places you can cook from. You know, a lot of African businesses, they cook from home. It's not legal to cook in your home and sell to the public. You can cook from home and serve people for free, but you can't cook from home and sell as a source of income. You have to cook from a commercial or a certified kitchen space. So, you know, things like that are, you know, information that I got and learned. And so I got my food handler's license. The designer who worked on my branding, my label design was also an instructor from that incubator program. And so, you know, you get like a discounted, he's an instructor in branding and design at a college, but he also was coaching in that program part-time. I learned about food science, food safety. An instructor from George Brown came and she talked about the food science and food safety aspect. And I got my nutritional panel done by George Brown College. And I learned about like the shelf life analysis. Like, you know, you can't just put the product in your fridge and assume how long it should last and just put that date on it. You have to go to a lab such as Gelda Scientific in Mississauga, and they would put the product in the conditions that they expected to be in, and will give you the actual shelf life. Because if you predict that it's going to last 6 months and it only lasts two months, yeah, then that's not good, right? So, you have to be able to back it up with a lab. And then obviously the nutritional panels and all that also comes with the calorie counts. All those things and little things like even your ingredient lists, like there are rules around labeling, and like your ingredient list should be in the order of the quantity. For example, if you have mine is soup, but my soups are not just based on water. So water is not usually sometimes the first ingredient on my list. Sometimes it's like tomatoes or tomato paste or something or beans that are the higher volume, but you don't just list your ingredients, you list them by the order of volume or quantity that the grams per ingredient, right? So those little things that, you know,
yeah,
may not matter in the end are things that are mandated by the government, right, as the, you know, how you put your label together. So so the things that I learned from the program, things I learned on my own, and things that you learn from. And one of the things that I will say is, even though as an immigrant, you know, we talked about being immigrants and, you know, being a first generation immigrant, we don't have grandparents' equity. We don't have a grandparents', yeah, you know, RSP. We're just building our own equity and our own wealth here in North America. So it's really hard to, you know, I would say that I've been blessed to have a good career. So that has helped me, you know, learn about how to, you know, be successful. But being an entrepreneur and running a business and getting the financing to run a business is a whole different ballgame. And so you find that, you know, being Black, being female, being an immigrant, there's so many strikes on you to be able to get the funding that you need. And also not actually having the network to be able to say, oh, by the way, I heard that there's this funding somewhere, or, you know, I'm a member of a, I would say, continent that gets a lot of funding, but gets a lot of funding for not entrepreneurship, but for poverty or eradication of poverty or eradication of this, or education on like certain levels. But not for entrepreneurship, because maybe that's not a priority. I don't know, but, so, you know, my friend who is Jewish, she got funding from her Jewish community, you know, and there's like, you know, a lot of funding from other communities, but in my community, like, I can't go to my community to say, oh, I want to launch this food product. What? Like, there are hungry people out there. So priorities are different. Right. And so, I don't have, you know, friends and family that I can go to, to get that funding. So I really have to rely on my self-funding. So I've practically self-funded the business up until recently that I'm now scaling up because we're getting into Sobeys in the fall. So we've had to scale up.
And congratulations.
Thank you. So we're scaling up and I'm now leaving the commercial kitchen, hallelujah, because producing myself, stirring the pot of soup myself has been a painful process. I wouldn't say that, you know, sometimes I dread it. It can be exciting, but it's a lot of work chopping. And, you know, it's all manual. I don't have, like, big equipment. So all the veggies that you see in the soups are chopped manually. Everything is like, you know, you buy some equipment, but a lot of things are still manual. So it's a lot of work. So I'm really excited to have somebody else do that. So we're moving to a co-packing facility. Okay. Yeah, co-packer is, for the audience that may not know, it's basically a third-party manufacturer that will help you produce your soup. Make sure you sign an NDA, a non-disclosure with them. You sign a contract with them, and then they produce on your behalf. And it does reduce your profit margins because they take out of your profit. But at the end of the day, it's worth it. If you can't afford to build your own facility, it's a good way to just focus on the business side of things because you don't want to be producing yourself.
Right.
You can't do that. You can't scale and be producing yourself. So yeah, that's basically how, you know, being an immigrant and the food experience. I think the last thing you asked about was COVID. The way COVID has affected us has been, I'll say twofold. It came, luckily, it came during, as you know, in North America, the off-peak season for soup. So COVID kind of came in the spring, summer. So it wasn't a heavy season for us. And now that it's ending, it's like, okay, perfect timing. But as well, it was also the transition time for us because we're actually changing our packaging. We're kind of rebranding and relaunching in October. So we're moving from our current plastic tubs into pouches. So that the whole summer I spent mainly focused on that work, rebranding, and basically we're still using the kind of like the same, it's still the same design concepts, but we're changing it to pouches and it doing some improvements based on feedback we got from our customers on the labels and packaging. So we're doing that. And of course launching the new recipes. So, it was good in that sense because this was already a downtime for a slow sales period. Those 3 months, core months of summer. But as well, it was also a period when I was going to be re-strategizing anyway. So it wasn't too bad. I would say that the downside was because we use a shared kitchen and then some of my, the part-time people who actually help me when I'm doing production, two of them are moms and there was no daycare. So they couldn't come produce. And it was just like, am I going to start retraining people to know how we do the production. So that was a little kind of, it kind of affected because even I'll get calls from stores to say, oh, we want to stock up. And I'll be like, we're out of this and I'm not sure when we'll be able to produce again. So that was the downside of that, but it wasn't too bad because it was already our slow season anyway.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's,
luckily.
That's good. And it sounds like there's big things to come for it.
Super. Yes.
So as you talked about sort of the feedback you were getting from customers, I found that to be interesting. So how, maybe a couple of questions. One is, you talked a little bit about your customer base earlier being mostly Caucasian, but how do you interact with them to get feedback? Like how do you, because I don't think this is something that people do really well. And then just in terms of educating them on like the food, how does that work also?
So being a new brand, or even big brands do this as well, but if it's a new product, you have to do demos. So just like when you go to Costco or any of the stores, you do the demos, you give people free samples. And then they taste it, you talk about the brand, and nobody else can sell your brand like you can. especially if it's something that you're passionate about. And so I will do a lot of the demos. You know, as you grow, obviously, you can't be in all the stores at the same time. So you hire people to do the demos. But yeah, that's basically how we okay. would. And then we have a feedback form online where some customers will send information. And a lot of the feedback that we got was, oh, we need more vegan recipes. Like the carrot soup used to be vegetarian, not vegan. And it was just a simple fix to make it vegan because we used to put cream in it, and we just changed it to coconut cream. And that was simple. And it actually tastes even better,
yeah,
right?
Sure, so with the coconut, yeah.
Yeah, so that was an easy fix. And then, you know, we made sure that the pepper sauce was also vegan. So things like that, just to minor changes, but listening to our customers, what they're asking for and what the market is asking for is always good to pay attention to not just do what you think is right for your customer, do what your customer is asking for. So right. when we do the demos, they will ask for certain things, or even some of the older, because a lot of the customers are also in, you know, the baby boomer generation, and sometimes the they would say the font on the
interesting
yeah, the font size on the packaging was a little small, so can we increase it a little bit? So that's what some of the things we worked on to make the, and the pouch, now we've made the back fully white so that the black text is very clear to read, because a lot of the information is on the back. That's where the ingredient list is, and that's where the nutritional panel is. So we want it to be very clear so that it can read better. So those little things here and there that can make a huge difference, as are the changes that we've made. And that's, it's true demos. We listen to our customers, and that's one of the things that COVID has affected, because being a new brand, and I'm a little nervous about that, sincerely, because we're moving into the bigger retail, and if we're not able to do sampling, you know, how would customers know about this new product? So we're going to spend the demo dollars. You just really have to pivot as a business owner. So the plan is to just spend the dollars you would use for doing demos to instead do more advertising, or do sales or something like that, or do coupons. So that way people can get, there's more visibility for the brand.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, with COVID and like having those sorts of demos, that's going to be challenging. Yeah. You have a fantastic story.
Thank you.
I'm glad that we were able to share that. What I wanted to know, which you touched on a little bit, was like, what's next for It Super? Like, what's your next big vision? You've talked about bigger retail, which, you know, signals like, you know, there's a lot of interest, you're going to grow. But generally speaking, where do you see It Super going?
So as I joke around with some of my other entrepreneur friends, when I get to America, that's when I know I've made it. So no shade to Canada, but the American market is where my dream, where I hope It Super will be in the next couple of years. I'm being realistic, so I'm still just, you know, in Ontario. So the first step is to get, you know, fully expand, scaled up in Ontario, and then into like the neighboring, go national, so Montreal and Western Canada, and then around the same time as well hit the States, because you guys are the ones who have all the money.
You should speak to, I don't know if you know, I can't think of her name right now, Egunsi Foods, Yemi, what's her name? I can, if you don't know her, haven't met her, I can introduce you to her. So she does soups, mostly on the Northeast, but she ships nationally as well.
That's New awesome. York.
I think she might be a good person to speak to, because she does, she also does, African inspired soups.
Nice.
So the both of you may have things to talk about from that.
Yeah, so, definitely. That's nice. I
need to connect the both of you.
Yeah, for sure. Because thank you. Because you know, the thing with Canada is population is what you know, commands a lot of dollars, right? So Canada is a big country, huge, huge landscape without that many people. So, and as well, we don't have a commanding currency. So, and then, you know, a lot of things are either you have to ship them from the US or ship them, like, it's just, and logistics is a nightmare in Canada. It's just so many things that are limiting for an entrepreneur in Canada. And I've not been more passionate about, like, I love Canada. You know, you've been here, you lived here yourself as well. It's an amazing country, safe, but the entrepreneur spirit in me and the African hustler spirit in me is like, I keep telling my partner, I'm like, when are we moving to the States? He's like, it's, you know, the killings and everything that's happening in the States. I'm like, how many Africans have you seen that have issues? Like, Africans go and mind their business, you know? So I'm like, I'm just going to go to the States and mind my business.
I think I should definitely connect you to her. I think she's also had some growing pains and has learned a lot through her process as well. So I think there might be some synergies, as people say.
For sure.
Well, great. Okay, so before we transition to the rapid fire segment, can you let people know where can they find you online, on social media? Bye.
So,
soups.
I would say that exciting times are coming. We're moving into pouches. So I think for us, that's going to be amazing because then logistics will be easier. We can ship better. We are available online through our e-commerce. You can go to www.itsuper.com, and that's ITSSOUPER.com. And from there, you can go and link all our social media pages. On Instagram, we're at itsuper, Facebook and Twitter. So that's basically, I guess that's cool. It really.
Yeah. So, and I will link that in the show notes so that people can also click on it when they listen to go directly to the site.
Awesome.
Okay. So time for rapid fire. Like I said, super easy questions. No, like okay. I'm not even going to ask you about jollof. So we wouldn't even.
Okay. So we won't go there, right?
Okay. So let's go. Dine in or take out?
Takeout.
So this is good for you. All this COVID stuff, you can take out as much as possible.
I'm a homebody. Yeah. I'm sorry. I love my home. I love being home.
Hot or cold soup?
Hot. Born in hot. I don't like cold food.
Swallow or rice?
Ah, I would say rice. Rice any day. I would say rice goes any day. There's some days swallow, I'm not in the mood, but rice
any day. Okay. Yeah. Which would you rather have more of, money or free time?
Hey, you know what? Money, because with money I can buy myself some free time.
Oh,
when you don't have money, you're going to be hustling to get money. Yeah. So might as well have the money. I'll go for money.
That's a good one. And then, what's your biggest pet peeve when you're out dining?
Pet peeve when I'm out dining? I would say bad service. Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, just not being attended to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, being bad service and not being attended to, like, AKA being ignored. Yeah. And then you start to think, okay, everybody's getting served, but not us. Start looking around, and you don't want to have that feeling because, you know, for us, it's easy for us to go in that tangent of, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. And the last question, your favorite African restaurant anywhere in the world?
You know what? I went to Dubai, was it last year? Yeah, last year. And I really loved Kiza. It was really nice.
Oh, yeah. I when you said Dubai, I knew you were going to say Kiza.
Yeah, it was good.
I lived in Dubai for a little bit, too. And that was...
Girl, you've lived everywhere.
Yeah, that's a whole other story. I've lived everywhere. Yeah, that was our jam, though. Like, the music, the food, like... The
yes. Of all that. And it was, like, we went there really late, and the food was still good. Yeah. And then there were people clubbing in the back. Like, it was a nice, and It was a kind of, if there was a restaurant like that here, I would comfortably take my coworkers
right,
to because
exactly, right?
it had that level of class that I felt like, okay, I would like to share, right? So yeah, definitely Kiza.
That's great. Kiza cool. All right, well, that's it. This has been...
That is it? Oh my God, yeah, I enjoyed this conversation.
The time just flew.
Yeah.
It's been great getting to know you, getting to know your story. Like when I first read your story, I thought, oh, this is somebody I'd like to talk to. And getting
Thank you.
Speak to you, it's just been validating in terms of, you know, the success you've had with your brand. And I know that big things are coming for you. So I wanted to share your story so more people know, you know, the great thing you're doing and hopefully... People patronize. We have listeners in Canada too.
Yes.
Canada is one of our
please support. Please support,
please support
this little brand.
If you're not based in Canada, but like you're Nigerian, I know you know people that live in Canada.
Yes.
So let them know. I think it's great what you're doing and the world deserves to hear about it. So
thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. To keep up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Item 13 Podcast. Item 13 is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.